In the United States last year, 150 police officers were killed in the line of duty. In the same period, 418 officers took their own lives. The number of officers who kill themselves has been rising in recent years. Researchers say suicide is a silent crisis in American policing, largely because the often macho police culture keeps the problem under wraps. NPR's Eric Westerveld reports.
Around 11:30 at night in March of 1986, Louisiana State Trooper Bobby Smith pulled a car over like the veteran had done 1,000 times before. Just one more license and registration, please. But as Smith approached, a man with a history of drug addiction and mental illness opened fire with a 12-gauge shotgun. The felon was killed in the shootout. The muzzle blast blew away part of Smith's face and blinded the state trooper. But the steadfast and proud police culture had taught him to keep up an image of strength and keep his emotions in check.
You know, when something bad happens, or you work fatality accidents or shootings, or you know, one of your peers is killed in the line of duty, it was pretty much told to us, you know, you suck it up and you deal with it and you move on. I pretty much had that philosophy that, you know, big boys don't cry, I'm a Louisiana State Trooper, for heaven's sakes. That's just the way it is when you're a cop. But no one ever told us that you can only put so much water in a cup.
Smith had lost his sight, and he soon lost his career and then his marriage. He began a downward spiral into a deep depression. He'd sometimes sit for hours crying, distraught and confused, holding his handgun.
I thought I was losing my sanity, and I started having anxiety and panic attacks, which ultimately led to a thought of suicide.
Bobby Smith at first fiercely resisted any therapy, and he was kicked out of a school for the blind after he attacked a classmate who often mocked him. "Hey, it's the super-duper trooper dude who's traded his badge for a blind man's cane," the man taunted. Smith says he's like dozens of other cops who experience or witness violence, a gruesome car accident, or shooting. They resist talking about their fears, flashbacks, nightmares, paranoia, and pain. And sometimes the trigger is a relationship problem exacerbated by daily job stress. Cecilia Hall's 28-year-old son, Jerry, joined the Baltimore police force out of high school, and he soon became a member of an elite undercover narcotics team.
He even told me one day, he says, "Ma, the stress is enough to kill you." But he absolutely loved it. I could never understand it, but he did love his job.
Despite Jerry's affection for work, job stresses mounted, and at home, Jerry's second marriage was falling apart. One day in January of 1991, Jerry did what 95% of police who kill themselves do. He turned his service pistol on himself. His mother says neither she nor his colleagues saw it coming.
He wasn't sharing with a lot of other people. We had no idea that Jerry was this depressed. And being on the police department, if you come forward, you're felt like, you know, you're a wimp or something like that, to come forward and let people know you're having problems.
We're seeing relationship problems factor in here, trouble with the job, we're seeing stress, we're seeing alcohol. And you add to that equation the presence of a weapon, and it's a dangerous situation.
Former police officer John Violante has written extensively on police suicide. He's a researcher at the University of Buffalo's School of Medicine. His studies show that police have a threefold increase in risk of suicide over the general population. Police have the fourth highest suicide rate of any profession, and the numbers have risen every year for the past 4 years. That's according to the National Police Suicide Foundation, a small nonprofit with a largely volunteer staff. And those numbers are considered conservative, as few departments keep official statistics on suicide, perhaps out of fear of lawsuits or bad PR. Young officers between the ages of 25 and 35 are the most prone to suicide, Violante says, as idealistic exuberance gives way to the real-life dangers and difficulties of policing, including increased criticism and scrutiny over issues including racial profiling and abuse of force. And there's no coping with psychological trauma 101 at most police academies.
I heard an officer, an academy administrator, say once that we need more survival training on this job. More courses on how to save ourselves in shooting situation and drive cars and stuff like that. But the real survival training needed in policing is how to psychologically survive that job. Plus, the job of policing is getting increasingly difficult. You almost have to be an attorney to make correct decisions out there on the road. The older officers, they've adjusted, you know, they've coped successfully, but the young ones can't seem to be doing that today.
While many departments offer employee assistance programs, they're often viewed skeptically by rank and file, worried that a visit to the counselor will hurt their career advancement. Bobby Smith, the former Louisiana State Trooper, eventually pulled his life together, and he went on to get a PhD in counseling psychology. He says with few exceptions, police unions, fraternal organizations, and managers are failing to confront what he calls an epidemic of police suicide.
I think that administrators across the country are afraid to admit that we have a serious problem in this country with unrealistic expectations of police officers to deal with all these loss and trauma and grief and death and just move on like it's no big deal.
As departments continue to lose more officers to suicide than line-of-duty violence, Smith is taking matters into his own hands. Next year, he's opening a clinic in Dallas, Texas, for police officers struggling with personal and professional problems, including substance abuse and post-traumatic stress disorder. Eric Westervelt, NPR News.